versus Holder, 092689. And Mr. Cola.
Good morning. May it please the court, counsel. My name is Yusuf Cole. I represent the petitioner in this case. It's a family of three in this case. Actually, there's another child, but the other child was born in the United States. Family are from Mali. Ms. Fatmota Kanti and Cohn and Kamisa Diara both underwent the practice of female circumcision in their native Mali. What we're asking in this case is, and we're saying in this case, that the petitioners in this case met their burden of withholding of removal and torture convention. The case law is quite clear.
Before you get into that, is there anyone in the U.S. that could take care of Miriam if both the parents go back?
You know, I've asked them about that. They are exploring that option as far as who can take care of this responsibility. But that's the core issue in this case. And I know this court has addressed that issue before. In both cases have found that you can't get a derivative claim for asylum or withholding. We're arguing, and as I argued in my petition is and the brief is, you know, with all due respect, that's the wrong approach in this kind of situation. This is a very unique fact pattern that we have to deal with. It's a reality of life for these people, is that they come from a country, they come from an area that this brutal practice, and this court has consistently, I think every court in the nation has recognized this is one of the most brutal practices around. And if you look at the young daughter in this case, she's eight years old at the time. She goes to this practice twice. Okay, I mean, that is not, you know, a normal thing to happen to a young girl at that age. And what we're saying is the Sixth Circuit and the Ninth Circuit have both recognized, the Ninth Circuit not directly on point recognized, but it has remanded a case back to look at that issue, is that this person should be able to claim a derivative claim of asylum and withholding of removal based on the fear of what's going to happen to their daughter. We know for a fact.
Let me ask you this. Did the BIA consider your argument on appeal that female genital mutilation of Miriam would constitute direct persecution of her parents as opposed to derivative? I mean, it looks to me like they didn't consider that and they only addressed the derivative question.
Correct, Your Honor. My understanding is they, looking at it and reading through it, they did not address that claim on point. And we're saying they should address that claim on point. And, you know, there should be, as far as a voice from this court that says you can claim derivative asylum based on the situation that your child is going to suffer. We can't sit here and say, as a civilized society, that you have to make a decision. Either you go back to where you're from and leave your kid behind or take your kid back to that country and undergo this procedure. No parent wants to be in that situation.
But did the BIA distinguish this case from Olowo? They distinguish this Oforji case, but not Olowo.
No, I don't.
Am
believe,
I right on that?
Yeah, I don't believe they did distinguish that case. What?
Why is that important that they do so?
You know, with regard to those cases, this court and other courts have always gone in the thing of, is there another method of where this child can be and stay and so forth. You know, in this case, we would say both parents are in removal proceedings. They are both going to be deported. And now that puts them in an awkward situation where they don't have, like, another spouse they can take care of who's an American citizen. They can leave with the spouse or the parent there. In this case, they're going to have to leave their child, if they decide to go that route, with total strangers or someone who's remotely related to them. And, again, we're asking that's not the way it should be.
Well, our Gatimi decision, and that was the one where there was FGM done to the wife of a Kenyan man, and we suggested there that FGM conducted on the wife could constitute punishment and therefore prosecution of the husband. And then we had that Cohn case that came out of the Second Circuit. Both of those cases came down after the BIA decision, right? So, and obviously you'd like it to go back to the BIA and for them to consider the outcome in those cases.
Absolutely.
And can you just articulate why you think it's important that those cases be considered by the BIA?
Yeah, because in those cases, the court ruled that in those particular fact patterns that the practice is a form of persecution and punishment against a spouse or a relative. And we're saying in this case it's the exact same thing. They're going to punish Miriam, where they're going to punish the parents by forcing Miriam to undergo this procedure. They've always objected to this procedure. They're opposed to the procedure. They were opposed to it back home. When Kamisa was circumcised, it was done while the mother was away at school, and they did it twice. So we are saying that in these cases, the board and the immigration judge should look at those decisions and say there is a possibility of derivative claim in the sense that they are punishing the parents for bringing the child back there, for opposing the procedure, and living in that society.
And then the issue of past persecution, it's your position that because they have been opposed to this practice, that you've met that test as well, right?
There's two processes that. One is they've been opposed to it, and the record is clear. I know counsel is going to argue that this wasn't exhaustive, but the record is clear at the immigration judge level, and to a certain extent, it wasn't worded fully and completely, but it was presented to the BIA that they were opposed to that practice. They consistently are opposed to that practice. But in addition to that, once you have this practice conducted on you, you have met your burden of persecution. It's up to the government to show something different. That burden shifting never occurred in this case. It was just assumed that this, I don't think anybody questions the credibility of this happening. What happened was once she testified to it, they just moved on to the second part without actually shifting the burden to the government. Now, people would argue that it's not going to happen again, but that's clearly not the case. Kamisa had to go under the procedure twice. And also, additionally, in 2008, the Attorney General, Mukasey, remanded a case. It's a BIA decision where it says, the BIA previously held that you couldn't undergo this procedure twice. The Attorney General, looking at that decision, said, listen, it's possible you can go through this procedure twice, and it's possible that you can still continue to have a fear or a persecution. So what we're saying in this case is once they established they were persecuted, in which I don't think anybody can question that was persecution, that it was the government's burden to show something different.
Well, the IJ expressly found that the petitioners did not argue past persecution, that it was more fear of future persecution. But in the asylum application, didn't she indicate that she was subjected to past persecution?
Correct. There's parts of the questions of the asylum application is, how were you mistreated? What happened to you in the past? She specifically went, this is what happened to me in the past.
And was that appealed? The finding that there was not past persecution, was that appealed to the BIA?
Well, I don't think the immigration judge made a finding there wasn't past persecution. I think the immigration judge made a finding that the persecution, the basis or the argument that the attorney was making was that the persecution was based on the daughter, the U.S.-American child born here, was going to face if she got returned. But it's like going to a doctor with a broken arm and you go say, I think I have cancer. The doctor goes, well, no, your arm's broken. You still have the broken arm. They went in and said, listen, this is what happened to me in the past. Boom, once you say this is what happened, there's persecution. I don't think anybody questions. I don't think even the immigration judge says there wasn't persecution. The next issue is the attorney argued in one specific direction to kind of go towards the asylum claim, but they have established the threshold for meeting their withholding claim. It was the government's burden to come with evidence that it was no longer there.
This is, of course, a government edict, I guess, at some point. Is that it? The government enforces this? This isn't a family thing.
It's in my dealings with these kind of cases, it's you can't just say it's a government edict per se. It is this. It's everyone does it.
That's a culture. I've been confused with this in the past because I remember cases that we've had where it's the family that insists on it. Grandparents.
Right.
It's nuts.
Right. In this particular case, it was the grandparents, in essence, who did this to Kamisa and so forth.
And this is I guess you say, well, the government acquiesces or condones or what?
The government completely allows this to happen because they take, there's arguments that some people say they take steps, but those steps are just non-existent. Throughout all of the West African countries, this is what happens. It is the norm. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about it.
And trying to follow up on this direct persecution based on psychological harm, I mean, we've hinted at it, actually said it more specifically in this Gattini case. And then two other circuits, the Sixth Circuit and the Second Circuit have, at least the Sixth Circuit has found an Ethiopian mother could establish persecution based on psychological harm she would experience from having to expose her child to pain and suffering.
Right. And we're asking that the court here follow the Sixth Circuit because that is what covers this scenario. It's a unique fact of life that people have to deal with. But my position, with all respect, is the Sixth Circuit is what we should be following.
Now, the Second Circuit sent it back to the BIA to make that kind of determination as to whether or not the mental anguish of the mother, who was a victim of the genital mutilation, faces the choice of seeing her daughter suffer the same fate or avoiding the outcome. So you would prefer that we just make that holding as the Second Circuit did.
Send this back to basically the immigration judge so that they can properly present their claim and let the immigration judge make a determination.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Thank you.
All right, Ms. Ching.
May it please the Court, Linda Chang for the Attorney General. The only issue before this Court today is whether the record compels reversal of the Board's determination that petitioners did not establish eligibility for withholding of removal or protection under the Convention Against Torture based on the alleged harm of FGM to their United States citizen daughter if she returned to Mali with them. Opposing counsel has mentioned the Sixth Circuit Abay case.
Before you get into that, has the government identified anyone in the U.S. who could take care of Miriam?
From the record, it appears that they lived with Ms. Cohn's older sister's friend in Chicago in 2004, and also they stayed with her husband's friend in New York after the birth of Miriam.
These are friends, not relatives. We don't have any idea what their ages are, their circumstances.
Not from the record, Your Honor.
And then when we look at the O4G case and the Olowo case, we have a different circumstance here because in each of those cases there was at least a possibility that the father could care for the child in the U.S. Isn't that right?
In the 4G case, the identity, location, and immigration status of the father is unknown at the time of the decision, actually, which then makes the situation much more similar to this case at hand. Additionally, that petitioner had also undergone FGM and had feared it for her two United States citizen daughters.
Counsel, well, could you speak up just a bit, please?
Yeah. Olowo said that when there is a parent who is available to care for the daughters in the U.S., they're under no compulsion to leave. We don't have that situation here, do we?
No, we don't, Your Honor. However, the youngest child is under no compulsion to leave simply because she is a United States citizen and she's not under proceedings.
I'm sorry? You have to speak up.
She is a United States citizen, therefore she is not compelled to leave.
So she could just live here on her own? I mean, that's the problem. There's nobody that's here that can take care of her. I mean, that's a big problem. And then, are you familiar with our Gatimi decision last year where we held that FGM to a family member can be direct persecution to the applicant? This is the one involving a Kenyan. This was a Kenyan man. His wife was going to be subject to FGM, and we held that it was that would constitute punishment and therefore persecution of the husband. So if we sort of take that case to its next logical level, wouldn't this case qualify?
Well, the difference then is that petitioner here has never argued that it has been direct persecution of her. It has always been a derivative claim of fear for her youngest daughter. That is also the difference between this case and the Abay case from the Sixth Circuit, where she argues that it would be her own persecution because of the psychological suffering that she would incur. However, petitioner here has never made such a claim. And we can't speculate as to what the parameters of such a claim would be, whether it be opposition based on political opinion, opposition based on her particular social group, which then begs a different analysis.
Yeah, but, I mean, here she was subject to it. The other daughter was subject to it twice. I guess they didn't get it right the first time. And so does it take a big leap to say that, you know, she's prosecuting it now because of the persecution of the daughter and how this would affect her and it would equal prosecution of her versus the direct psychological impact? I mean, does that claim have to be spelled out?
Under the INA as it stands, there is no derivative withholding for this situation where the parent is only claiming it on behalf of her youngest child. Therefore, her claim isn't legally cognizable.
But counsel pointed out it's kind of a catch-22. If the answer that the mother can claim persecution and punishment because of what will happen to the daughter if the daughter returns to Mali, the mother can obviate that by going back without her daughter and thereby leaving, what is she now, 4 years old?
Five, I believe.
5 years old, leaving a five-year-old without any apparent means of care and support.
That does sound like a difficult decision. However, she has not claimed that she cannot go back to a different third country where they could be spared from this.
I see.
As far as looking at this thing, from backing it up, because it looks to me like it's gone to a position where we're confined with our precedent. What should have been done that would have been at proper timing and proper allegations?
For proper petitioner claim. To make her claim?
If they're starting this thing over in a timely manner, what could they have done?
I can't speak for what they should have done. Petitioner now alleges...
Under the law, I'm just looking. We look at this with frustration because we see the obvious dilemma. But if is there a way under certain time limits within a year and all that stuff that this would have come out differently?
If petitioner had chosen to do this differently from the beginning, similar to the Bay case in the Sixth Circuit, both mother and daughter, the 8-year-old at that time, could have filed their own asylum applications separately and gone forward on their own because both had been subjected to FGM. And then they could have gone through the past persecution analysis on their separate applications. I can't speak to as how successful they would have been, but that would have been another route for them. And if the court doesn't have any further questions, I'll sum up. In conclusion, the petition for review should be denied because the claim is not legally cognizable under the Act, and therefore there is no reason to disturb the agency's decision that petitioners aren't entitled to withholding of removal or protection under CAT.
And so, and your position is this, because they didn't plead directly this direct persecution based on psychological harm, your position is they're out the box on this?
Unfortunately, that's the legal framework that we are working with, and Congress hasn't spoken to any alteration of the regime, of the regulatory regime.
Well, okay. Any other questions? Thank you. Counsel, how much time does he have? I'll give you 1 minute.
This Counsel, you want to address that the question Judge Williams just raised regarding a procedural bar for failing to raise this theory below?
First of all, I don't think the theory was not raised below. I think the theory wasn't articulately raised in the level below. But we're dealing with unsophisticated people. And what we're running into is we have the Department of Justice with all their attorneys and all their might trying to force a family to make the most brutal decision I can possibly imagine. It's saying, what do you do with your child? You have a five-year-old child, and you say, listen, leave them on the streets of the United States and go back home to a country that has already persecuted you. To me, that makes no sense. You have a difficult task before you as far as hopefully carving up a way to remedy this problem. We are bound by some of the errors that were made in this case originally from the get-go.
What were the errors?
One of the errors was it would have been much better if they would have filed in a timely fashion.
Yeah. This is a problem. See, we're shoved into a situation that you can't back out of. And it's frustrating, but that's why I say from day one, what could they have done? Because when you look at this, you say, well, this is reprehensible. But at the same time, we have to follow the law and our precedent. And I guess they're saying we're stuck with it. You're saying we ought to change the law, basically.
Well, I mean, there's two issues. The timeliness issue is one issue. Then there's the issue of the decision from the Sixth Circuit. My belief is, and my hope is that we go towards a decision similar of the Sixth Circuit, where people are not forced to make that decision. If my client ultimately loses on a technicality in this case, I'm not happy with that. But if the law changes in the sense that we know for the future that people in this situation don't have to make that decision, and there's some benefit from the, from your decision. But in this regard, we have to look beyond what the black and white letter of the law says and look at what's the right thing to do in this case.
So if we were to reverse it, one way to reverse might be to distinguish existing cases on the basis that here both parents would be deported, leaving no one to take care of the daughter and effectively subjecting her to constructive deportation.
Correct.
That's one theory that we could. Another theory might be that the prospect of having a daughter unwillingly undergo FGM actually constitutes direct psychological persecution to the parents, and so you would need a finding of derivative asylum. But the problem with that was not raised before the BIA, right? That's the problem with that. So another option might be to remand to the BIA with instructions to consider Cohn's claim in light of some of the recent cases from the Seventh, Second, and Ninth Circuit that came out after the BIA decision.
I think that's a reasonable way to deal with this specific case, with the errors that we're kind of stuck with from what transpired again. I wasn't the attorney in the original case, but I'm stuck with those errors to a certain extent.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. We thank both of you for your fine arguments in a very difficult case. We'll take the case under advisement.